Hello, you are listening to an episode of Trade Talks, a podcast about the economics of trade policy. I am Samaya Keynes, economics and trade correspondent for The Economist in London.
And I'm Chad Bown, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington.
This episode is about Donald Trump's first major round of tariffs.
It's been a very busy week. On Monday, the news arrived that the president had approved tariffs on washing machines and solar panels. He used a law that says that if there's a sudden surge in foreign imports and they hurt the American industry, then he can impose a safeguard tariff on all the imports coming in to give that industry some breathing space. This law hasn't been used in a while. Its use tends to generate enemies. And after only 3 days, these cases have already been disputed at the World Trade Organization.
So a while back, we recorded an episode about the economics of the solar panels case, and you should definitely listen to that. It is a treat. In this episode, we are going to tell the story of washing machines, where the economics is a bit different, and we'll also try to explain what comes next. At the end of it, hopefully you'll have a sense of where we should be on a scale of one to worried.
And for those of you rushing to fetch your tin hats, don't worry, we're not yet in a trade war. For now, it seems like people are being pretty grown up about all this.
First of all, let's give a quick update on solar panels. Just to give you a sense of the scale, the latest estimates from the Solar Energies Industries Association, which is the industry body, there's around 12 gigawatts of solar power generating capacity installed in 2017 in the US. So 12 gigawatts installed. That's about the power of 15 million horses. That's a lot of horses.
That is a lot of horses.
And Trump just essentially imposed a 30% tariff on around three quarters of that. So a lot of that is imported, and three quarters of it is now about to get 30% more expensive. The tariff will fade out. It will fall to 15% over 4 years. This is really big. In dollar terms, this is the third ever biggest case of this kind.
Yeah, this is a really big deal. Demand for solar panels has been growing over the last few years as these things have become cheaper. Now, this policy may not be catastrophic for the industry, as they've been thriving for a long time now on these bargain basement solar panels. But making the inputs more expensive is going to hurt someone down the line, most likely the folks that are actually installing these things on the roofs of homes.
So the other really noticeable thing about this tariff was that it was really broad. So the biggest countries hit are Malaysia, South Korea, China. Sometimes America's trading partners, the countries it has trade deals with, are excluded. But none were in this case. The ITC, which is this quasi-independent judicial body that sort of reigns over these things, they looked at the case and they recommended that Canada and Singapore wouldn't get hit. They said, no, exclude these guys. And Trump said no. So they're included, Mexico's included, the EU's included, everyone is caught up in this thing.
So this sounds big, and it is, but I guess it is notable that President Trump didn't go crazy. These import restrictions will cause some pain, but they are less harsh than what some of the companies who originally asked for the protection wanted. The remedy wasn't even as extreme as what some of the ITC commissioners, these judges in these cases, actually recommended.
Okay, so solar panels is the bigger case, economically speaking, but washing machines. In washing machines, President Trump approved a 20% tariff for the first 1.2 million washing machines to make it into America. And then in the first year, he approved the highest possible tariff that this law allows for anything more than that, so 50% tariff. And like the solar case, this is a broad tariff. So even that 20% tariff on those first 1.2 million units, that's really going to hurt the companies exporting these washing machines into the US. So as I think you can probably tell, this is one of my favorite trade cases. There's a document that describes the case that these judges published, the USITC. They blanked out basically every single number in the document. And it's still really, really interesting.
Okay, let's do a little bit of backstory on this case. In the United States, the washing machine market is super concentrated. Very powerful brands that everybody would have heard of. Back in the mid-2000s, 3 out of every 5 washing machines that Americans bought were from only 2 companies. In 2006, these 2 companies were Whirlpool and Maytag. And they merged.
So when these 2 companies merged, the competition authorities were a little bit worried about this. Having 60% of washing machines sold to just 1 company is a lot of washing machines. But they did eventually allow the merger. And there were various reasons to feel slightly more relaxed about allowing one company to have such huge market power. In some products, not washing machines, but ovens or freezers, actually this Whirlpool company didn't have such a big share of the market, so there was less reason to worry about those. In washing machines, where it looked like it was super concentrated, they did actually face competition from abroad. So if this merged Whirlpool plus Maytag company tried to abuse their market power, the idea was that foreigners would swoop in and cut prices. The Department of Justice actually specifically mentioned newer brands like LG and Samsung that could increase their imports into the US.
So after the merger, economists did actually look into what happened. In a study by Orly Ashenfelter, Daniel Hoskin, and Matthew Weinberg, they found that the merger led to price increases in dryers, but not in washing machines.
So dryers was an area where it was even more concentrated than washing machines, so you might have expected to see these price rises.
Yeah, that's right. And in the washing machines, it seems like there was a switch toward more efficient front-loading machines. And those are the types that Samsung and LG were really good at making and were competing really hard.
So it looks like in dryers, where there was huge concentration, the prices went up. But in washing machines, where there was this competition from abroad, actually the prices stayed pretty low. Competition seems to have been working. But then the competition from abroad that Whirlpool had relied on to get the merger approved became a little bit too tough to handle. From 2012 to 2016, imports started rising, and they virtually all came from Samsung and LG. And Whirlpool started complaining that these were unfair.
Unfair. That sounds a lot like my favorite. Anti-dumping and countervailing duties. So Whirlpool put in its requests, and the American authorities investigated and ended up applying a set of targeted tariffs on imports from South Korea and Mexico. That's where the LG and Samsung washing machines were made at the time. At the time, washing machines from China weren't being covered. So Samsung and LG, they said, fine, we're going to move. And they set up production and started exporting to the United States from China. That's not illegal. Just the kind of thing that happens with these narrow kinds of tariffs. But of course, the story doesn't end there. Whirlpool successfully filed another round of anti-dumping cases, this time against China, in 2015. And so after that one, LG and Samsung moved their washing machine production again, this time to Vietnam and Thailand. And so that's where the imports coming into the United States have been arriving most recently.
Yeah, the lesson here, kids, is that trade is like water. If you try to stop a leak in one place, there's just another one that will pop up someplace else. And if you're America, applying lots of these things can make life pretty complicated at the World Trade Organization. So South Korea, in fact, sued America because of the way it was calculating these duties, and it won. So there's already been a dispute over these duties. When America didn't stop doing what it was doing, the South Koreans, actually, in the last few weeks, they asked to retaliate. They want to apply $711 million worth of retaliation.
That's right. And even in these older cases, it was generating WTO disputes. Okay, so in November of 2016, President Trump gets elected. And then in May of 2017, Whirlpool makes its biggest request yet. This time it wants a global safeguard. This is under Section 201 of the Trade Act of 1974, the same law as that solar case that we've talked about. It decided narrow tariffs weren't working. It wanted the government to stop the imports from coming in from everywhere. Now, legally, under this law, the criteria are a little bit different. The threshold for injury, so just how injured you have to be to get protection under this law, is a little bit higher. So it's slightly more challenging to show that you've been hurt by these imports. But the other big difference in these safeguard cases is you don't have to show anything about foul play. You don't have to show that the imports were unfairly subsidized or that they're being sold below cost or anything like that. All you have to do is show that there's been a sudden increase in these things and that you're struggling to deal with them.
So we looked at the USITC documents, which summarize the legal case. But to make sure that when you file one of these cases, you don't have to reveal all your financials to everyone on their dog, most of the numbers are blanked out. You know, we get that. It would make a better Trade Talks episode, but fine. Essentially, Whirlpool convinced the USITC that the imports had made them struggle financially.
Now, the counterarguments in a case like this are actually super interesting. So the supporters of Samsung and LG point out that the way these things are priced was a bit misleading. Washing machines in the United States, at least, are bundled with dryers. And each one is typically sold at the same exact price. That's what the retailers demand of them. They force companies like LG and Samsung to charge the same price for a washing machine and a dryer. But to make them, washers are just more expensive. There's more moving parts inside of them, and they're a lot heavier to ship. But that's okay, because you make a bigger margin on the dryers. But for something like one of these ITC investigations, if you're only considering the washers, it seems like the washers are being sold far too cheaply, and you're losing lots of money on them. But when you do that, you miss out on the fact that you're actually making more money from the dryers. Well, in this case, I guess the ITC was skeptical of that argument, saying it couldn't account for the petitioner's finances worsening over this period. And the other big thing was Samsung and LG claimed that Whirlpool didn't really respond to the fact that demand was changing, that they were introducing fancy new washing machines into the market that consumers really wanted. Their argument was, instead of the surging imports coming in and that was causing the injury, it was really that consumers just really liked their products. Now, to be fair, this is a really, really challenging argument to make to the ITC.
They also argued over the definition of the product included. So there are incentives to define the scope of this thing in whatever way suits you. So it's in Whirlpool's interests to argue for a category of imports that rose super, super quickly and where their own sales didn't rise very much or they fell. And then it's in Samsung and LG's interests to argue that their super successful products, they weren't really competing with Whirlpool's and therefore they should be considered separately. Okay, so as geeky as we are, we really just don't have enough information or the expertise about this case to comment on the legality, and the US ITC judges have done it for this. Essentially, the US law allows for these kinds of escape clauses. The US ITC saw the information, they made their judgment. But just stepping back from all of this, this does look like a pretty classic case of a concentrated domestic industry where there are very few domestic firms, in this case one big firm, asking for protection. In a much more competitive market where there are many more firms, there's less point in asking for protection because there's less opportunity for you to take advantage of the fact that there are fewer competitors and raise prices. And it's also just harder to organize politically. You know, when there's just one of you, you can do all the work in making the petition and you get all the benefit. Whirlpool is big. And the US ITC judges were fairly explicit in saying that as a result of these measures, they'll be able to raise their prices and profits. That's the point. The point of the safeguard is to essentially restrict the outside competition and help the domestic company. And in this case, it looks like it's paid off for Whirlpool.
Yeah, so let's run through the economic consequences of these new trade restrictions. In theory, they'll favor domestic producers over the foreign ones. And President Trump has said specifically that share prices would increase for the companies that are now producing in America.
So I eyeballed the share price of Whirlpool. I did some visual econometrics, as it's known in the trade. And it seems like there was a little tick up when the tariffs were announced. Although I should caveat that reading share prices like that is a bit dodgy. By that point, people already pretty much knew that their tariffs were coming. There's all sorts of other stuff going on. I'm less keen than Trump on reading a lot into share price moves.
Okay, so we won't read too much into share price moves. What people care about is what happens to the prices of these things. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that LG is planning to increase the price by $50 for some of their models in response to the tariffs.
So tariffs lead to price rises. Who knew? Shocker. The really interesting thing, I think, about this case is what it means for American jobs. So there's an extra twist to this story. So it turns out that Samsung and LG were already in the process of moving their production to the US. Samsung has this new plant in Newbury, South Carolina, producing 1 million units in 2018. And LG has also planning this new plant in Clarksville, Tennessee. It's up and running, but there are no washing machines in it until 2019. So when Donald Trump hailed these new tariffs, it said it would, you know, lock in these investments by Samsung and LG, bringing jobs to America. So one reading of all this is that all this threat of tariffs has led these companies to sort of, you know, shrug their shoulders and say, oh, fine, I'll produce my washing machines in America where I don't have to worry about the threat of tariffs.
For Whirlpool, this is a bit of a weird outcome. If these tariffs have actually encouraged onshoring or LG and Samsung to move production to the United States, it's not really clear if this is going to be good in the long run for Whirlpool and the 3,400 workers at their plant that makes washing machines in Clyde, Ohio. Now their competition is local. It can't be stopped by tariffs anymore. It's as if with all those tariffs, Whirlpool forced them to move into their neighborhood. And now they might not actually like having them around as neighbors. And there's really something glorious about all those anti-dumping and countervailing duty cases where Whirlpool was complaining about foreign subsidies. Now that Samsung and LG have probably been given really nice tax incentive packages by US state governments.
Okay, so it's weird for Whirlpool, but for America as a whole, ultimately Samsung and LG are moving their production onshore, and that, I guess, does mean more American jobs, which means we have to ask the question, did it work? Did the tariffs lead to jobs? And maybe the answer is yes. Partly, this was speeding up a decision that was already made. Washing machines are really heavy. It makes sense to make them near consumers. And Trump's Section 201 couldn't have done it. This was too long in the works. They've been planning this for too long. But the earlier anti-dumping duties could have contributed to it. Tariffs are this nasty bit of business risk that it does make sense to avoid.
There is some economic evidence that these sorts of cases of anti-dumping duties can work to encourage foreign investment. Not always, but sometimes. Bruce Blonigan looked at past cases of American anti-dumping duties in the 1980s, and he found that the duties could work at inducing investment into the United States, but really only for the big multinational firms. Now, that does make sense. For these firms, they're already operating in several countries at a time, and in that case, moving your production to another country really isn't all that scary.
I guess the bigger problem is that you worry that everyone will start doing this, and then ultimately that will stop American exporters getting their stuff into other countries. So the rules-based system of trade is meant to stop everyone trying to grab the jobs for themselves and these sort of beggar-thy-neighbor policies. America is 300 million consumers, the rest of the world is 7 billion. That's a lot of consumers you're potentially shutting yourself away from.
And even if it does create jobs in the short term, there is the question about how much extra consumers are actually having to pay for those jobs. These actions always do have some winners, but in these types of cases, the costs of the protection are typically very high for the number of jobs saved. So my colleagues here at the Peterson Institute have estimated that in earlier safeguard actions, just like this one, they did also save jobs, but their estimates put the price tag at $900,000 per job saved. That's a lot of money. Before wrapping up, I should also do my thing and worry about the safety of the global rules-based trading system as well. So this safeguard is an unusual measure. This type of policy isn't used by a lot of rich countries, even though it has been used quite frequently by a lot of emerging economies. So countries like India, Turkey, Indonesia. In the United States, past presidents have really shown restraint. Even in the instances where the International Trade Commission recommended that the president impose tariffs, and so the president had the legal power to act, he frequently didn't. Out of the 40 cases in which he was given the authority to do so, presidents only chose to impose protection 19 times.
And 19 out of 40 might seem high, but those 40 cases where the judges said, yes, these companies have been injured, and yes, you should act. And even then, in 21 of those cases, the president did nothing.
And the worry here is by President Trump seeming so gung-ho the first time around, this could set a really worrying precedent and encourage other companies, other industries coming forward and asking for the same type of protection.
Yeah, we've seen this with a different kind of protection. So with a Section 232 asking for protection for steel and aluminium imports, we recently saw a third one with the uranium industry requesting relief. So there is the potential for these things to snowball. However, so far, we don't seem to be in trade war territory. South Korea has launched WTO disputes against both solar and washing machines, very speedy work from their lawyers. So every single safeguard imposed by the Americans since 1995 has been challenged at the WTO. These things get disputed. And in almost every single case, America has lost. That makes members of the US trade apparatus extremely antsy. If this is contained to a World Trade Organization dispute, then there isn't that much cause to worry. That's still people respecting the rules of the global trade system. As long as it's within that, then it will remain contained. The worry is if countries start retaliating outside. So there are cases in the past where China, for example, has essentially created bogus disputes that it was challenged about and lost. And so the danger is that if people think that America will stop playing by the rules, then they should retaliate outside the system. And it also seems like there's some other stuff coming that could get countries like China very, very upset. So watch this space.
Okay, before we stop, I actually have a final confession to make. Out of all the trade defenses, all the trade remedies out there, it turns out this safeguard one actually isn't the worst. Now, I don't like them. It is a kind of random form of protection, and it's open to abuse. But in the least, they're non-discriminatory. It's silly to have tariffs on specific countries only. That just creates incentives to have exports hop between countries. And in safeguards, you don't have this bogus allegation of anybody doing anything unfair. It's just, I can't compete. Mea culpa. And perhaps best, they're temporary. They last for 3 or 4 years. That's it.
So safeguards are basically most favored nations, non-discriminatory protectionism, and you're cool with that. Chad, I'm disappointed and I'm shocked. You are going soft.
These ones are still a really bad idea. Don't get me wrong. It's still really bad, but it's sort of the least bad of all of them.
Okay, I can sense the inner turmoil in you. I think we should leave that there. So listeners, that is all for Trade Talks. You know the drill, tell all your friends, suggest us for the Trade Podcasting Awards, maybe start a Trade Podcasting Awards just for us. Send us your comments and suggestions. I am at Samaya Keynes.
And I'm at Chad Bowen.
And we're at @trade_talks.
That's 2 underscores.
Because just one Section 201 remedy in 1 week was not enough.
Not nearly enough.
Oh my god, I need sleep.